Hello, fellow gamblers out there. You listen to the show. You know me and Ryan. We enjoy gaming every once in a while. Mikey does too as well. If you also enjoy to bet on sports, try out betdsi.com. If you're ready for some real action, give it a whirl. They've got over 20 years in the business, top-rated business. They're safe. Everybody at Barstool plays there. There are no problems paying out. Everybody gets paid. There are no issues there. You sign up today, you get a free $10 to try the service if it's your first time playing. We're offering through BetDSI 100% bonus on your first deposit. They have great customer service there. Again, fast and easy payment of winnings. There's tons of things to bet on. You know, me and Ryan always talk about hockey. They got the alternate goal line is where some real money could be made. That's an option you can't get in Vegas. You certainly can't get everywhere. All kinds of things that you just don't find everywhere at BetDSI if you're looking for all kinds of off-the-wall stuff to play, little props, side stuff, a lot of fun stuff that you can play if you enjoy a variety of things like myself and Ryan do. Even if you want to bet on the election, although the odds are pretty high right now, that's still on the board if you want to play that, UFC, all that good stuff. BetDSI even has live in-game wagering for all football, basketball, hockey. Well, baseball just ended, but they'll be back up with futures. Certainly, they're probably already up there. So play everything you want at BetDSI. So go to BetDSI.com right now. That's BetDSI. Go there and use promotion code SPIT10. Again, promotion code SPIT, S-P-I-T, 10, number 10. SPIT 10 for your free wager. Start winning today. Get free $10 at BetDSI.com. Promotion code SPIT10. Everybody, welcome back to episode. What are we on? Episode 3 or 4? I can't even keep track of the Barstool Sports version of Spit and Chicklets.
This is Florida Rear Admiral.
Florida, right? Yes, now. I'm coming to you live from the Sarasota, St. Pete, Tampa area, Florida, down here for the Bruins game tonight. Hi, Ryan. Hi, Mike. Say hello.
What's going on, buddy? How you doing?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing great. You know, I Rear. So you are going to the Bruins? Are you wearing a jersey and a hat, or just a hat?
I'm not a big jersey guy. First off,
really?
No, I own a couple, but I've never been a big wear the jersey guy to the game. I don't know. I mean, I got a couple of them, but I always think you go to the game, you drink beer, you spill all over them, you kind of ruin them. You spend $200 on them. I mean, why, you know, bring them to a game and spill shitty beer all over them. Not my idea of fun.
Yeah, I hear you.
I'm more of a t-shirt, ball, probably a hat guy too. You know, I got one of the old school, one of the old school B shirts on. So, yeah, Tampa's a good place for a game. We're looking for it. Should be a good
How's
time.
How's the barn down there?
It's great, man. It's a real good barn down there. They get a real good crowd. I know, you know, Florida suffers for their reputation more probably from the Panthers.
Not them. Tampa's, yeah, that's a legit place to play. Like, I remember when people were saying Stamkos is going to leave, I'm like, what are they talking about? Have they ever been down there? Why the hell would you ever leave Tampa?
Yeah, like, it's
perfection.
No taxes.
Wait, it's really,
no
it's that good of a market? Yeah.
It's unbelievable. They have great fans. Well, first off, the team this year, that's actually who I went on PMT, and I don't know why I thought, I said Washington, I think, is going to win the cup. I'm already changing it a day later. I think Tampa is going to win the cup this year. So the atmosphere is incredible just because of how good the team is. And then the rink's beautiful. They have the best, like, scoreboard in the arena. You'll see it goes, like, all the way around, Rear Admiral. You'll see it tonight. Have you been down there before?
Yeah, come on, man. I was down in 04.
I forgot. Yeah,
I'll have to find
there.
The picture. I tweeted out from
You were drinking out of the cup and you didn't win it. I remember. That's like, you've probably done that 5 times.
No, I didn't drink out of it that night. That was the night I left the building after game 7 and somehow got back inside. I still don't know how I was obliterated, and they let me back in the building.
In a Bruins hat, right?
No, that was a your Stanley Cup. That was in Pittsburgh.
Oh,
this
okay.
One's
okay.
Camp. I got back in the building, and my buddy I was with was his friends with, like, Marty St. Louis, and I ended up back inside and ended up, like, drinking with, like, Marty St. Louis and Brad Richards till, like, 4 o'clock in the morning, and, like, telling them I woke up in Boston, and, like, my friend was like, hey, dude, I can get you a ticket if you can get down here. I'm like, dude, I'm at work, man. And he's like, come
and
on,
dude.
Get down. So I fake sick, and then I ended up flying down spur of the moment down to Boston, I mean, down to Tampa, and ended up going to game 7 and, you know, potting with the Stanley Cup after. I'll look for the picture. I'll tweet it out. It's like Marty St. Louis in the middle, like holding a giant beer can, like all his friends around him, like half my face in the background's like cut off. So I'll try to dig it out. Yeah, that was
like your scene thing. In the town. It's like your scene in the town when you were the chef.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, a little bit. Except I don't know if this was as Oscar worthy, but we'll see. You know.
Yeah. So we were texting last night. That baseball game. Are you shitting me?
Unbelievable.
Are you shitting me? That was the best sporting event I think I've ever watched.
I mean, World Series, you know, baseball.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never been that excited and on the edge of my seat. I bet on the Cubs, but I wasn't even, it was bizarre. I wasn't even, like, thinking about, like, the money. And then for, like, a time, I wanted, like, Cleveland to win just to see the heartbreak of Cubs fans. And in the end, I was happy for whoever won, but that was just a crazy, the most crazy viewing experience I've ever had of a big sporting event. I couldn't believe what was happening.
Yeah, I can't wait to see the ratings. I mean, I know the game, I think it was game five, broke all the Cleveland NBA ratings from, you know, the most recent finals when they won. So, I mean, the game six and seven ratings are going to be through the roof. It was exactly what baseball needed. Like, I mean, you know, baseball, I wouldn't say it's been struggling, but it's definitely not.
Yeah, no, it's not what it was. It's
definitely not nearly as popular as it was at one time. But, I mean, last night at a quarter past 11, I'm getting a text from my wife saying, can you believe this? How exciting is this? Like, she's someone like I got to, like, twist her arm just to watch a playoff game. And now she's, you know, she's texting me from up north, like, saying, can you believe this? This is unbelievable. This, like, I'm like, gee, that's...
You're like,
that's
wait, what happened? What are you talking about Housewives? Real Housewives? Yeah, she's like, no.
Exactly. I'm like, oh, are those real Housewives acting up again, honey? You know?
But I it love was the like, real no. Housewives, though.
It was just indicative of how much this series just grabbed everybody and pulled them in. I mean, you had, you know, two franchises. One had one in 108 years and another, what, I think, 68 or something. And, you know, like I said, someone's got to go home. Someone's got to go home crying and upset. But
I was so happy that scumbag Chapman gave up that home run. I hate that guy. I've always hated him. And he can't. And he's just been so good. But they used him the night before. There was all the dramatics about did they overuse him when they were up 9-2. And then he comes in like, what's he going to do? It's all on Joe Maddon. And he gives up a two-run tying home run in the eighth inning. I love that. Just to see, because I hate Chapman. He's a scumbag. He beat his wife. He's a rat.
Yeah. It sucks like that. You know, I mean, it's this stuff. I mean, obviously went on for you know, hundreds of years with athletes and the media obviously covered up or whatever. But, you know, we know so much more about what when these guys do shitty things. And, yeah, definitely when you watch the game, that stuff comes a factor. And you're like, oh
100%.
If they're going to blow it, good. I'm glad it's going to be on this asshole if they do end up.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, you know, exactly.
But of course, they did end up holding on, and you know, even Cleveland made a late run. I mean, even the bottom of the what the hell was it, the 10th there, it was just you just didn't know if they were going to come back and extend it again. It was just an amazing series, and you know, I mean, one of those ones you're gonna remember in, you know, 30, 40 years. Where were you? And everybody's gonna remember where they were. You know,
I was getting reminded of when the Sox won it, the Boston people, just like seeing old people cry and stuff. It was beautiful.
Yeah, there's a lot of that, a lot of old people videos of, you know, grandpa, grandma watching, you know, their team win it. But, you know, as fun as it is and as awesome as it is, and, you know, another week or two people in Chicago, their lives are going to be the same in 2 weeks. Not trying to be a Debbie Downer, but basically it's fun while it lasts. But at the end of the day, you know, life goes on. You know,
you're saying enjoy your shitty job next week. The Cubs fucking won. Who cares? Good luck.
Basically, yeah. I mean, I went to, you know, St. Louis when the Sox won, and, you know, about a week or two later, I mean, I made some money. I was awesome, great time. Then, you know, like 2 weeks later, it's like, you know, your life fundamentally doesn't change really one bit. I mean, maybe if you're a crazy dedicated fan, it might, and you know, you get a little bounce in your stuff, but, you know, a month later.
If your life gets changed by a team winning a title, like 2-3 weeks later, you're kind of a sicko. I mean, I respect it, but I can see exactly what you're saying. I don't know how that would happen.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's you got to have a little fun.
Unless you met a rocket the night they won it and then just started hooking up with her and then you had that going for you. I guess that'd be a good life changer.
Right? Yeah, that's an interesting take. Yeah, if you meet the woman of your dreams after your team wins it, there's some intrinsic value there of connecting it. But
there you go. I mean,
it's fun. It's great. It's all that. And, you know, in Boston, we've had, what, eight of them in the last 15 years. But, yeah, at the end of the day, I mean, it's nice. It's a new T-shirt and a new hat. But, you know, at the end of the day, you still got to go to work and hump for 8 hours a day to, you know, pay your mortgage and have your kids snot all over you. So, you know,
exactly.
Life still goes on, even though it's fun. That's a basic message out of it.
So we talked about NHL in terms of NHL news, the Montreal Canadiens continue to friggin' just dominate the entire league. Carey Price is unbeatable. He's not even giving up goals, it seems like. So I think that this might be for real. I don't think they're going to end up breaking any records in terms of wins, but this is another year where Price comes back, and I think we're going to end up seeing the Canadiens as one of the top four seeds in the East. And then once they get in the playoffs, it seems like anything can happen.
Let me ask you, Ryan, do you buy into the notion that a team can peak too early? Is that something that happens in the NHL? We hear that, you know, we heard about the Bruins a few times. They peaked too early. I mean, I think some guys do in high school, some guys do in college, but the hockey teams actually peak too early in the NHL.
It's funny because if you're a really good team and you know, a team like Chicago, when they come out and they have a start, you're never wondering, like, oh, are they peaking too early? It's just, oh, they're this good. We're not that surprised. But then you see teams like Montreal where it wasn't expected, and Edmonton where it wasn't expected. And that's when the peak too early conversation comes up, because it's never happens with teams before the year that are picked. If Washington was off to a lightning hot start, no one would be like, oh, I wonder if they're peaking too early. Like, no, they're just this good. They're going to be this good all year. So in terms of like talent and how deep a team is, I think you can peak a little early, but in the end, like, what are you going to do? It's something that just doesn't even, nobody has any effect over. If you're playing good, you're playing good. It doesn't matter what time of the year it is, and you want to continue it as long as it is. So it's tough to kind of be a player on a team and actually think for any moment, like, wow, we're peaking too early. You know, I was in Pittsburgh and we started off red hot my second year. And people were saying, like, you guys are just, you know, you think you could continue this pace. And, like, everyone in the locker room, you're answering stupid questions from media like that. But all you're thinking is, like, we're just playing, like, as good as we usually can. We're not thinking about we're peaking. You just try to win every game. So,
right.
I mean, exactly. You know what I mean? It doesn't make, it can happen, but nobody even knows it's happening if that's the case.
Right. You're not going to consciously draw back, like, oh, we're playing too good, we better shit the bed tonight so we don't peak.
Yeah, and you don't even think like, oh, like, this is going to end here. There's no part of your brain when you're winning, you know, you win 10 of your first 14 games, no one in their head's going to be like, oh, I wonder when this is going to end. It's just not even realistic.
Yeah, but I mean, and then, you know, there is the I know there's been a couple teams in the last 20 years, but, you know, the whole team that wins the President's Trophy, they really don't often win the cup. And, you know, I don't know if a team that wins a President's Trophy peaks too long, but, you know, is it something that they almost have too much intensity during the year where they obviously you're paid, you're going to go out and be professional every game, but obviously there are some nights where teams just kind of don't show up. But, you know,
yeah, that's natural.
The teams get spent though. A team that, like, you know, does win the President's Trophy, you know, by the end of the year, I mean, is it possible they are spent maybe somewhat emotionally or physically?
No, I don't even think that. I think it's almost the complete opposite, because I think a lot of times you see the issues with President's Cup trophy winning teams is that the last, like, month, 2 months of the season, it's not the competitiveness and being exhausted. It's that they're, like, laying back, you know. They don't need to win these games. They're not – you see teams, like, so many times your team goes on a run, gets the eighth seed in the playoffs, and then they go to the finals because they've been playing playoff games 4 weeks, 5, 6 weeks – prior to the regular season ending. All those games are playoff games for those teams. And then some of those teams that finish with the best record in the league, the last month, they haven't played a real meaningful game. So I think that's kind of what the issue's been in terms of when you win the President's Cup, you very rarely win the Stanley Cup. And I think partly is that it's tough to turn it back on for the playoffs. If you're just chilling for a month or two at the end of the year and you're winning games on your skill and how good you are, but you don't need to win games, to turn it back on right when the playoff starts can be tough. And that's why you see teams get upset all the time.
They get complacent.
They get complacent, Mikey. Dude, there he is, Mikey Grinnelli. Complacent. What a word.
The other thing, too, is what I don't like about the Canadians winning this much is that the puck line prices, just they suck at this when they're at home. Like last night, Vancouver.
I know.
And it's like, oh, yeah, they, you know, you're going to jump on them because they've been killing the puck line. And they're only with it, like a plus 140 or 150 last night in the puck line. It's not even worth playing. But you got to get the Canadians on the road. That's when you get a nice puck line price on them.
Yeah, and they're still good on the road. But listen, how about I didn't tell you guys this. Last Saturday night, I saw that Vancouver was playing at home against Washington. Washington had lost to Edmonton two nights before. They had a day off. Vancouver played the night before. So they're coming off a back-to-back. Washington's coming in rested off a loss. I'm like, boom, pound. Pounded Washington. Pounded them on the puck line. I wake up. I stayed up through the first two periods. They were up. I fall asleep, wake up. 5-2 Washington. I'm like, boom, perfect. Great hit. Sign on to the friggin' site. I bet it on Vancouver. I took Vancouver in both of them. I clicked it in the wrong spot, dude.
That's the worst.
I thought you were going to say you forgot the password.
Punch my own head in. What?
I thought you were going to say you forgot the password, which is...
Oh, no, when you forget to do that. I forgot. I just put it on the wrong team.
Oh, well, that would have been much better than putting the password and then putting the wrong goddamn team in like you did.
Oh, my God. Exactly. Because it's not a loss.
Hey, by the way, nice appearance on PMT. We got another huge bump. I'll tell you, man, if you ever need your podcast to rocket to the top of the chart, just have somebody on your show going, pardon my take.
Yeah, that show is those guys. It's like unreal. I don't know how you stay on that entire time. They never really take a moment off, and they just feed off each other. So you're kind of battling back and forth with them a little bit. You got to stay on your toes. You got to stay woke, as they say.
Yeah, you definitely got to stay woke with PFT there. No, that was good stuff. We definitely got a nice little bump from you being on the show. But going back to skates, we had a real good story earlier in the week. Craig Anderson from Ottawa, the goaltender, who was actually a short-time Bruin. He never actually got in the game. I think he was a backup for like 2 or 3 games here. But he's been the man up in number one guy up in Ottawa for the last couple of years. Well, his wife got diagnosed with cancer, and he was away from the team for a couple of days. His first game back, I might have been over the weekend. I forget exactly what date. It don't matter. He was in Edmonton. You know, his wife implored him to go back, said, I want, you know, the team needs you. I want you to go back. And he listened to his wife his first game back. He shuts out Edmonton in Edmonton. And they had been about the hottest team in the league before then. And he got the number one star of the game. And, you know, he was very emotional after, as expected. But what really got me watching that was seeing Cam Talbot, the goalie for Edmonton, actually come out. You know, once a guys are off the ice, they go in the locker room, and they only come out if they are one of the three stars. And Talbot came out just to give an ovation to Craig Anderson.
Well, Talbot was one of the stars, and then he just waited.
And that's what I mean. You're right. They usually kind of, if they do come out, they just kind of twirl and then go back. And yeah, he made sure to linger in the hallway in the little walkway there to give him an applause too. It's just one of those, you know, things that if you've seen any sport, it's just a real touching moment. And, you know, Craig Anderson was obviously pretty emotional about it, but like watching Cam Talbot just kind of wait there and getting to give that applause, it was a pretty special thing to see. Obviously it sucks that have to deal with another cancer story, but to have a you know, a nice little video like that, it was, you know, it warms the cockles of your heart, as they say.
I liked
cockles of your heart.
What really got me was when he was in the hallway by himself, and he kind of just crouched over, and you know, he was kind of just, you know, taking it all in, and you could tell, you know, not that anyone would ever make it, you know, about themselves and make it kind of a scene, but you could tell it wasn't that, and it was kind of him, how much, like, you know, it really meant to him.
Yeah, and I think that the best thing I read was that it's so true that as a former athlete had written this, that when you're dealing with things off the ice, your time on the ice is actually like it's like your release, you know. And so what happens is when you're going through really hard things like that, you actually get off the ice, and you saw that was right when you get off the ice, and they told him he was first starter, so to wait, and that's when you're just. You know for a fact, then it all comes out because the game's over. Your job's done. You did your job, and now you get back to real life stuff. So when you're playing, and I had an experience in this in Pittsburgh. My mom had a brain tumor, and she was going through surgery to have it removed. So it was a really trying time for, you know, my family and myself. And in that, I would play games, and I would be okay. And then the game ends, and you start thinking about it. So I totally could see where he was coming from, and that's probably where it all hit him. And it was just... It was total emotion. It was like some things are supposed to happen that way, and they did for him, just to have that great of a game and know that right away his wife came to his mind. So that was a great story for hockey. Unfortunately, hopefully she's okay. We send our thoughts and prayers, but that was some special viewing that night.
Yeah, it was a good scene. Again, unfortunate that the scenario has to play out, but it was quite a thing. It kind of got lost in the shuffle over the weekend, I think, with football and the World Series and a lot going on. So that was
up in Canada, so you never, you know, it never makes its way down really that often. If it's two Canadian teams, you don't see it that often in the U.S. Sports Center.
Yeah, exactly. So last week we had debut of the segment All Right Hamilton. We had some pretty good success for it. We had our first T-shirt winner.
Who won the T-shirt?
It's at, I want to say, is it
Sean Sullivan? I
don't have the exact thing in front of me, but I have his address. I told him I'm down in Florida. I'm going to get the shirt out to him next week. People seem to take to it. They use the hashtag. We got a lot of questions. I know Mikey rounded up a few of them. We're gonna shoot through a few of those right now. Mikey, what do you got, pal?
All right, let's start it off. Joseph Tower, and he spelt it Joseph, J-O-S-E-F. Nice and European-like.
Ooh, little Mengele.
Like Joseph extra. Stumple.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Stumple. Yep. We didn't have
throwback.
To
throwback.
So Joseph says, "Hey, Stool Chicklets, is the combination of speed, four scoring lines, and Hank enough for the Rangers to win the East and the Cup? Hashtag, all right, Hamilton.
All right, Hamilton.
All right, Hamilton. All right, you could take this one from the start. I'm going to give you my opinion.
I think they probably got enough for forward depth when you got a guy like Hank who can steal games for you. I don't know. Is their D going to be good enough for them as the year goes on? I guess that would probably be a bit of a concern. I know they got some miles on them. You know, guys who were producing a little bit better a few years ago aren't as good as they used to be on the Rangers. I think with Hank, anything can happen, man. A guy like that, when he gets hot in the playoffs, he can steal games for you. But, you know, the Rangers window, I think, is closing with Hank. I don't think they have, you know, they had Talbot in the pipeline. They obviously traded him to Edmonton, but, you know, they got to do this on Hank's window because without him, I don't see how the Rangers are going to win without having a number one goalie. So I as much as the Rangers did replenish bringing in Jimmy Vesey, what's he got, 6 goals near the top of the league. He's having a great start. I also do feel the Rangers have a window here. And if they don't win in the next couple of years with Hank, they're going to have to go out and find themselves a number one goalie. Well, unfortunately, with a place like New York, you can just go out and sign a guy if there is a guy available out there. But I don't know. I wouldn't consider them a favorite.
Their D are just and the thing is, it's such a forward-driven league now. But you still see, once the playoffs come, you got to be able to defend. So I love their forwards up front. You'll see that Pavel Buchnevich is going to make noise. I played against him in the KHL when he was 18. Really good player that just got back in the lineup. He was injured. Kevin Hayes has had a huge bounce back year. Rick Nash has as well. Rick Nash talked about Kevin Hayes, how he lost 20 pounds this summer. I see him around Boston. He's a great guy. And to see him put that effort in this summer, I was not the least a bit surprised to see him start off this well. And in terms of Easy, I mean, he's probably exceeded my expectations, which is tough. And I think I knew a little bit about him, so it changed as opposed to all hockey fans just heard about this kid. So they might have even expected more just because of all the buildup he had. But no one, the type of player he was, I didn't think he'd hop off this start. I heard guys in the summer who skated with him said they wouldn't be surprised if he got 30 goals this year, and I thought they might have just been saying that. But now, I mean, 25-30 is realistic after the start he's had. So the thing that's upsetting for him is he has more goals than Austin Matthews. He has, I think, he's third in rookie scoring, and you don't even hear about him. It's Austin Matthews and William Nylander in Toronto. And Patrick Laine in Winnipeg. So it's like, the Canadian media gets round. And unfortunately, Vesey could get 30 goals, and I still don't think he'd have a sniff at Rookie of the Year just because of you see him being a little bit older, and you can already tell that he's not going to really get much noise for that award.
Which, and it's kind of ironic, too, playing in New York City, where typically guys who play there don't, it's not often accused of, no one hears about them. They play in New York. No one knows about them. But like you said, guy like Austin Matthews playing Laine, all these kind of hyped guys who were drafted top five, they're kind of stealing his thunder. But I think if he just keeps doing what he's doing, we'll certainly hear his name at the end of the year when they're talking about the Calder.
Yeah, exactly. And then I agree. But and then in their defense, the Rangers, like you said, that's where their team's weak. And, a guy like Mark Stahl and Dan Girardi, still guys who, make plays, but they've lost a step. And Mark Stahl's had a bounce back year to start, but their D just isn't that deep. And Ryan McDonough, I think, is a great player, number one defenseman. But you just need a little bit more. And that's not to say that Stahl and Girardi couldn't really find a little in the tank as opposed to last year at the end of this year and really kind of get going and play some of their best hockey. But it's just tough because foot speed kind of matters now. I went through it. You see a guy like Girardi who's a warrior, block shots. But just once you lose that half step, the game becomes a lot harder. You just can't be in areas that you were before, no matter how good positionally you are. So I think we've seen a little bit of that from him, but in the end, it'll be the Rangers defense that kind of lets them down if they do go on to have a quick playoff exit or not finish top of the East.
Taking a quick look out west at the bottom of the standings, two teams that you would probably expect to see at the top, instead it looks flip-flopped. Los Angeles and Nashville. Los Angeles obviously lost Jonathan Quick, a huge loss for them. They got to go with Peter Budaj and Jeff Zatkoff. That sounds like an 80s villain in like a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie, that name. And then Nashville, Vekka Rinne's been struggling. They're obviously missing Shea Weber. Of those two teams, Ryan, if one of them's not going to make the playoffs, which team out of Nashville and LA, only one of them can make the playoffs, who's it going to be?
I think Nashville makes it. I think you're going to see them at some point in the season put a little string together. LA,
they don't have a goalie.
Look at the Kings, and they don't have a goalie. But listen, so number one and number two and number three reasons that they're going through this is they don't have Jonathan Quick. But you got to look at, like, LA's getting older. You know, you see guys that are now 31, 32 years old that, like I said before, with some of the players in the Rangers, you just lose a little bit. You know, Dustin Brown, I think, just lost a little bit. He's still plays hard and is a leader for that team, but you know, Anze Kopitar's the captain now. And then you see on D, they're just battling injuries. When you're battling injuries to start a year, unless everyone ends up coming back healthy, which very rarely happens, it's so hard to rebound from it because you just get off to such a slow start based on not having guys. And then as the time goes on and people do recover and other guys come back, well, then you see other guys get injured a lot of times because they've been overplayed and overused while they were trying to make up for when their teammates were injured earlier in the year. So it's kind of this vicious cycle where I could see LA kind of fall into. And Nashville, I mean, it's been a weird start. I think losing your captain and getting in a strong, loud personality like PK is really kind of – it's different for a team. But they got Pekka Rinne, and he's going to be there. So Nashville, I think, will get in, and I could totally see LA missing, which is crazy to say now.
I see them as two teams trending in a different direction, don't you guys? You know, one team's kind of just looking to find their step and get it going in Nashville, and then you have a team in LA who's kind of, you know, kind of falling off.
Yeah, and I think that Nashville will find it. But you look at LA, and like, Alec Martinez, a defenseman, he's leading their team in points. He has 7 points through 10 games. I mean, you know, so you need guys to – I think Kopitar could be way better, which I'm surprised about because people don't – or people forget that, as the PMT guys like to say, that Kopitar is Patrice Bergeron out west. I mean, in a sense, can be even better than him offensively. So, yeah. I mean, he's a superstar that's off to a slow start. But Jeff Carter's a little bit older. I think Drew Doughty's a superstar and he'll be there, but it's just weird that their team, it seems to not be clicking. And when your goalie's out, it's just kind of led through that. So they're in different directions. It's just all about if they can actually turn around. Nashville will.
Yeah. I think the pots are there. And if, again, the missing Weber, they added Subban. I think they're just trying to recalibrate basically. Whereas the Kings, man, you know, it just shows you how important a goaltender is. And you know,
and you saw it with Montreal last year with Price. It's the exact same thing.
Bingo. You know, that's a great comparison, Ryan. Is, you know, like LA, you know, it's like, okay, even if guys aren't going or doing their best, but you know, if the guy in the between the pipes isn't making the saves when you need it, then it doesn't matter almost. How does, like, you know, I mean, how does that go in the room? Like when it's the obvious glaring weakness of a team is they're two goaltenders, and I mean, you know, is it on like the tip of guys' tongues to say something, or you just, is it just accepted and acknowledged that people just don't say it? Like, how does that go when that's the obvious problem in the room? Like,
if you're gonna be a pro, you know, you're not talking about it. You know, maybe once in a while, a couple guys are just, you know, they're close buddies on the team, they're always going to dinner together, and they're like, Jesus, fuck, we need this guy to mix in a save. Like, you know, that might come up, but it's never talked about in the room. I mean, especially when your goalies are struggling, and especially in LA's term where it's a call-up, and you got guys who are, you know, usually wouldn't be playing, it's just try to support and try to play as hard as you can to help these guys out, because nobody wants to see anyone struggle. I mean, especially one of your teammates, you know. You hate seeing guys around the league who struggle and get ripped on. I remember playing and you'd start seeing guys getting ripped, and nobody likes seeing that. It's the worst part of the job. I mean, it is what it is. It'll always happen. But so when it's your teammate going through that too, you want to play as hard as as you can for him and just hope that he figures it out. But it's goalies are crazy. I mean, everyone knows how weird they are. And when their confidence gets shot, it's like they really can't stop a thing. And it's crazy to see because there'll be at times when they're so on that they make saves that are like amazing to you constantly in practice and games when they're feeling it. And then when they're off, it's the complete opposite. You're shocked something like that could go in.
Yeah, some days it's like a beach ball. Some days it's like a Super Bowl. I've been there. I mean, I can relate, you know.
Yeah. Oh, you were a goalie, eh? Street hockey?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I don't think. I don't think I'm a toy. I don't shine shoes no more. But also too, like if you got a captain who's vocal or a guy or a vocal lead in the room who calls out guys who are playing like shit. I mean, they generally leave the goalie alone. Like, I mean, if a defenseman has a 4 turnover period and a guy's gonna call him out, but I mean, a goalie generally they ain't gonna say shit to him because he's the goalie, right? They just like you don't have to remind the goalie he's having a bad night. He knows it. They don't need the captain calling him out in the room.
That's why I couldn't stand Michel Therrien because in the minors. My first year, the original lockout, I think it was 2004, 2005, Therrien was coaching our team in Wilkes-Barre, Scranton, and Fleury was our goalie. And he had a great start to the year. We were a good team. And then in the middle of the year, he's 19 years old, started struggling a little bit. And Therrien came in after the second period one time and just, he would scream at the French guys in French and then the English guys he'd scream at in his nasty French accent. And it was just like everyone's just waiting to get ripped on. So he comes in, he reeks like cigarette smoke. He just ripped a dart right before he comes in and he starts screaming at Fleury in French. And everyone's just like looking down. And Fleury just looked really upset. I mean, 19 years old, this kid was, he didn't expect or really deserve this. And so he goes to the bathroom, Therrien storms out, and I asked the guy, Lane Nazardine, he's now the assistant coach in for the New Jersey Devils. I said, what did he just say? He said, you're the worst fucking first overall pick I've ever seen in my life. That's what he said in French. I was like, holy shit. No wonder Fleury looked upset. Like, you don't do that to a fucking goalie, but he did. And I remember thinking, like, you could say that to a player, but a goalie could just crush him.
Every time you're up Montreal, you hear like French speaking. I always think like this guy could definitely work at a strip joint. Like when they announce it,
he probably does.
Like Brazil, Lepe, stage one, Monique, Dev Leppard, pour some sugar on me.
I think you should go work up there doing that.
Yeah, I'll tell you, you know what? One of the most underrated parts of the high-end strip joints in Montreal is the fucking buffets, man. I'll tell you, it's been a while. I mean, since I was 18 and 19.
So you'd probably go in at like 3 and hang out, have dinner, like just perfect, right?
Whoa, buffets? You get there
at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and you pie at like 5 and they're putting that spread out. Come on, what am I going to walk to Burger King down St. Catherine Street? No, dude.
Wait, hey, Mikey Grinnell, are you freaking out? Do I hear you yelling about something?
Well, yeah, I've been to these a few strip clubs on St. Catherine Street and I never got the buffet. I missed out.
Dude, they probably didn't want to bring it out for you. You didn't look as classy and ready to spend some money as RA.
I'm not RA. No, RA, the most interesting man in the world.
So yeah, exactly.
There used to be, Cleopatra's. It was kind of like the, what's that fucking dump in the combat zone that's still open in downtown? You know, what's...
Oh, Centerfolds.
Naked Eye, my buddy, I'm down here with off the top. He's like raising his hand like it's class. Like, yeah, the Naked Eye, like that's like, you know, across from Centerfolds. It's like having a Morton's across from McDonald's. And we were up Cleopatra's one time, and it's like the Naked Eye of Montreal. And, you know, real dive, you know, you go in there and get the day started, whatever, you know, when you're up Friday at like noon or something.
Just a real degenerate place.
So this is like the worst place I had to build a nest. I mean, my stomach was an eruption. I couldn't make it back to the hotel. I look like fucking, it looked like they were filming Sesame Street in the bathroom because the fucking nest I had on the toilet was so fucking big. It's like, dude, you know.
Oh, I'm going to puke.
No. So I'm fucking, you know, I had to go. So I built a nest. I'm sitting there. All of a sudden, I hear the door open. I look down and I see my buddy's sneakers. Now, he doesn't know where I'm in there. And he comes in the strip joint, and I goes, hey. And he's like, what? I goes, I'll finish you off for 50. And he fucking ran out of the town. he had no idea it was me in there dropping a 2. And fucking, he's like, some guy just come in the back. He goes, that was me on the fucking throne, you nut. I told him I finished him for 50 and scared the shit out of him.
Oh, that's crazy.
Holy shit. That's when you get out of Cleopatra's, dude. That's time to go.
No, what happened? They put up. They played that song, "Lady in Red." The Lady in Red came out, and she was about a three, and they cleared the place out. It was like, all right, see you later. Time to get the fuck out of here. Oh, I missed that city.
All right, we need another question, Mikey.
All right, so this is from Nick Jesse. He says, "Stool Chicklets, will the Blue Jackets ever be real contenders with Torts as their coach? Hashtag, all right, Hamilton.
All right, Hamilton.
No. That's no. All I'm saying, no.
Yeah, Columbus, they seem like they were on the cusp of, you know, becoming a semi-contender there for a while, and then it just kind of imploded since then. We thought Jaamo Kekäläinen was probably better than he's been in that job there so far. They just can't get over the hump. I don't think Tortorella was the right move.
He sucks.
I don't know. I mean, Bobrovsky looks like a fantastic world beater one night, and then the next night, i.e. the night I bet him, he lets in a shit goal from Drew Doughty from the circle.
Oh, you've been bitching about this for a week now.
Dude, it was a fucking Dynamite 2900, bro. Come on, I'm going to bitch about it.
Oh, that sucks.
Sorry, did I say that? Oh, did I say that? All out? Are we taping? We'll cut that out.
You got Bobrovsky, dude.
Yeah, fuck him.
That's just what it is.
Dude, I had Pittsburgh last night, puck line out in Anaheim. They're another scuffling team, although they pulled it together. But I'm looking here. Winnipeg, dude, they're another team out west. Jacob Trouba, they missing Jacob Trouba right now. Are they going to do something to improve the team? What are they going to do with Trouba?
It's the crazy. It makes zero sense to me. And it's, if you don't sign by December 1st, you can't play this year, no matter what happens with any team, any trade. You got to be signed by December 1st. It's a new rule since the last CBA where you can't just sit out and come back in January. So this kid's got to figure it out. I don't know if at this point he's so set against playing for Winnipeg. I don't know if Winnipeg now doesn't want him back. I find that hard to believe because I've heard Kevin Cheveldayoff say, listen, we're doing the best thing that we can for this team. We really like him as a player. He's the one that wants to be traded. And he's like, well, we're not budging. So is this kid not going to give in and sign a 1-2 year deal to play this year, make some money? Because forget not development. Forget being me. Think of back to when I was his age, 22, 23. It's probably my biggest years of development as a player. So when you really gain confidence, you get stronger. He's played two NHL seasons. Get to that third, fourth, start becoming the dominant defenseman you want to be. So forget all that development he's losing not playing. He's not even getting paid. He's not even getting a paycheck.
Yeah, it's a principled thing you're doing, but at the same time, man, you know, your whole
collect
fucking
fucking cash, bro.
Yeah, your whole objective is to play hockey and get paid for it, and you're not fucking doing either right now. So, you know, what kind of advice you're getting? Is it worth it? Oh, you know.
And they're, it's real similar. It's not similar because Jonathan Drouin had a contract last year, but in a way, it's similar to him with Tampa last year. And he just said, listen, I want to be traded. But he was under contract, so they suspended him. So that was even more ridiculous on his end. But Yzerman stood pat. He said, fuck that. You're not telling me what to do. I'm doing whatever I want to do for this team. And trading you, I don't think is the best thing for it. So either get on the program or sit at home. So Trouba, he doesn't have a deal. So it's a little different than that. But Kevin Cheveldayoff's doing the same thing in Winnipeg. He's saying, I'm not doing anything you tell me to do unless I think it's best for the team. So you can sit there all you want, but you're the one not playing. And you're the one not getting paid. I just happen to be missing one of my top, you know, five defensemen. He's the third pairing defenseman on the right side. That's his problem. He wants to be in the top two units, but it's Bufflin and Tyler Myers.
Whit, how much of a difference, you know, as a defenseman, especially, like you said, a young developing defenseman, how much of a, you know, difference does it make? You know, I played defense growing up as well, and if you stuck me on the left side,
Mikey Grinnelli, fucking Larry Robinson.
No shit,
over here.
Mikey.
No, but I mean, if you threw me on the left side, you throw me on the right side, I could give a shit less. I mean, does it really matter? Does it really matter that much to you?
This has been a thing that's been like Mike Babcock, the inventor of hockey. He's huge on this. You have to play. You have to be a righty on the right side and a lefty on the left side. I played my first 4 years as a right defenseman on the left side, and I loved it. Offensively, you always have a one-timer. Walking the line, it's easier. Going back on pucks, you're wheeling on your forehand around the net. The issue can be that when you get the puck on a D-to-D pass, and then you have your blind side is all up the ice. So a lot of times defense want you to be able to see up ice as you get the puck instead of getting it behind your body as a lefty or a righty when you're playing the offside. So I liked playing it, but it's more coaches that seem that they think defensemen struggle. I think a lot of guys playing that are lefties and righties would have no problem playing the offside, because that's the same way I was and the guys I played with. Nobody really minds.
What do you guys think happens? How does this all end?
I think he's going to be playing for Winnipeg this year. I don't think they're going to move him. And is he going to sit out the whole year? Like, are you telling me November 30th, Winnipeg's like, take this deal, and if you have a good year, you're going to sign with somebody if it's not us. He's not going to take that?
Yeah, he can even take a fucking 1 year deal just to play and, you know, whatever, just to play.
It's,
you know,
it comes down to midnight, November 30th or whatever. How many days are in November? I never know that. But whatever it comes down to, I think he plays for him.
And if Winnipeg keeps scuffling, you got to think that's leverage for Trouba. I mean,
yeah, he wants them to struggle. The worse they play, the better for him. But yeah. I mean, they're not trading him unless they get what they want back, and that's a young D-man and probably a pick. And what team's going to give that when this kid hasn't even played? So you got to think this year he's not going to be very good.
I think Vancouver heard us talking about him a couple weeks ago because they lost every single game since we mentioned that. They had won four in a row or something.
Yeah, but I bet a load on them when I actually didn't mean to. So, of course, I'm the loser in this.
That's the worst.
I'm the loser in this.
Yeah, well, this segment's all over the road. Read another question, Mikey, then, and I'll write him.
We're an all-over-the-road type podcast.
Oh, that's what's good about us. We don't have any real formality here. We're a free-flowing, free-spirited show.
So we got Megs Corbin, who asks, would a new slash better goalie really help the Stars as dramatically as everyone seems to think? # all right, Hamilton.
All right, Hamilton.
Absolutely, 1,000%. If there's one team that can go from a pretender to a contender overnight, it's Dallas by getting a top flight number one goalie. Hands down, I've been saying it for three fucking years.
I know, it's just, I always thought Anthony Niemi was a pretty good player. Like, fuck, he's had a hell of a career, but it just seems like no matter who's there, it's been a long time, it seems like they never get the job done in net there. It's always been an issue.
Carey Lehtinen, they put all their eggs in his basket. He came in with a soft reputation in the playoffs. He's done nothing to change it. And, you know, in the Emmy won the cup in Chicago, and he hasn't been good since, man. I mean, they're paying him a lot of money. That's the problem. They can go out and get another goalie, but no one wants to take either of their goalies at those ridiculous contracts back. That's the conundrum for them.
Listen, guys, though, the Stars are missing Cody Eakin, Alex Hemsky, Matthias Janmark, and Patrick Sharp. So that's four. I mean, that's a line. That's a line and a player, all very good players that they just don't have right now. So I think when they get healthy, I really do. Maybe not win the cup. Maybe those two guys cannot get the cup done, but I could see Dallas being a very top team in the West if they could get guys back from injury and just get decent goaltending. They're going to score enough goals. Talk about taking the over on a team. That's an over team all day. But they're going to score enough goals. They just need decent goaltending to really be elite. So we'll see what happens when those guys get back from injury.
Not happening.
All right. Do we want another one?
Not happening. Let's do one more.
Let's do one final question.
All right. So we got Jordy, and his Twitter name is Yo Jordy. Says, Stool Chicklets, when Vanek comes back, does he continue the scoring pace he was on at the start of the year? # all right, Hamilton.
All right, Hamilton.
No, because he's Thomas Vanek, and he'll start fucking taking nights off again. That's what he does.
Who is this we're talking about? Sorry, Thomas Vanek. I'm with my phone there, pal.
Thomas Vanek, yeah. is he going to continue at this torrid pace? And I said no, because he's Thomas Vanek.
No. And maybe if he hadn't gotten hurt, you just ride that into a couple of months of being dominant, which he has the skill to do. But once you get hurt, you're not going to come back and be on a pace like you started off there. I mean, you see a lot of guys that won't continue their pace without injury. So coming back from injury is hard enough. What do you got for us, Mikey? Is there any others?
I thought that was the last one. I thought you guys said that was the last one.
We said, but no, you know what? That's actually good. We can segue into our other fresh segment, which we got some run out last week, and that's Ask a Millennial.
Oh, good, good.
Okay. So hold on. I've been wondering about this. Am I a millennial?
I am, dude. You're kind of on the highest scale end of them, Ryan. I think people say like early '80s till like basically the last 30 years, you're a millennial, and I think you're considered the high end. Plus the fact you didn't know who Linda Ronstadt was last week. I definitely think you're a millennial if you didn't know Linda.
Dude, you like, how old are you, RA? 40?
I'm 44.
Okay, 44. Oh, wow. All right. So I actually thought you were like 30. So you're 44, but you're like 60 basically, though. Because you all old shit.
I'm an old soul, bro. I'm an old soul, bro.
All right. So I want to ask a millennial. I want to ask. And Mikey Grinnelli is the biggest millennial. You're a millennial.
Oh, I'm definitely a millennial.
All right. Okay. So let's go. So who answers first?
Okay. I'll ask Mikey. Mikey, who is Steve Carlton?
Steve Carlton.
Steve Carlton.
Don't Google it, Mikey. Seriously.
Don't fucking Google. I'll break your fingers.
I have no idea who Steve Carlton is.
Ryan, who is Steve Carlton?
Pitcher for the Phillies, I think it was.
Wow. Bing, ding, ding. Okay, see, that's one that you're the higher end of the scale. I kind of had a feeling you would know who he is. Yeah.
Dude, I know sports. I'm not a millennial. I'm not a millennial in sports, bro.
I believe he was a four-time Cy Young Award winner. Yeah, he was probably the best lefty pitcher of the 70s in the National League. Certainly in the National League. Steve Carlton, Phillies. Then he bounced around a little late in his career. So, yeah, I'm surprised you know that. Okay, what about who is Greta Garbo, Mike? Who is Greta Garbo?
Greta Garbo? Yeah. Greta Garbo, man. I have no idea.
Dude, I have no clue, but I don't think anyone under the age of 50 will know besides you.
No, that's a tough
who
one.
Is she?
No idea.
She's an old school actress, like during the 20s and 30s. She was She was like a hot
20s
Swedish
and 30s.
That was obviously a higher end one. All right, here's another one, Mikey. What is Fraggle Rock?
Oh, Fraggle Rock, it's a cereal, right? I don't know. Fraggle Rock.
Holy shit, millennial. You little bitch, millennial.
Fraggle Rock.
Holy shit, it's Fraggle where the Rock Muppets live, dude.
Isn't
it where the Muppets lived?
Yeah. That's a little bit closer. You're definitely in the Jim Henson film. But yeah, Fraggle Rock was the HBO series from early 80s. It was these Muppets who lived in this fucking scientist hole in the wall. There was this whole other world of Muppets and shit in there.
Yeah, that's what I just said, where the Muppets lived.
Yeah, well, there wasn't. Well, the Muppets are kind of a whole other fucking charade. That was a show that, you know, they lived in the stage studio on the show, the Muppet Show.
Okay.
Yeah.
Either way, I knew Fraggle Rock.
No, you would.
I thought it was cereal.
Mikey Grinnelli thought it was a fucking cereal.
It kind of sounds like cereal, doesn't it?
You mean Fruity Pebbles?
No, I know what Fruity Pebbles are, but I don't know.
Cereal.
Fraggle Rock.
Here's one more. Ask a millennial. The Pope of Greenwich Village, Mikey. The Pope of Greenwich Village.
Oh God, I have no idea on that one. The Pope of
Greenwich. I don't either, Mikey, because I'm not 62 years old. Is that a mobster?
No, it was a 1982 movie with Mickey Rourke and Eric Roberts. They were like small time hoods in Greenwich Village, owing gangsters money. It's like a cult classic, but it's famous because Eric Roberts say, "Charlie, they took my fucking tubs, Charlie." It's kind of like a famous scene from that. But Pope of Greenwich Village, yeah, it's definitely a cult classic. Right, you guys did all right. I'm not surprised.
I crushed it. I crushed it. Mikey didn't do all right. He didn't get anything.
I didn't get one. I wasn't even close.
To know what
Mikey, we got to start asking him questions every week of ask someone who isn't old as dirt.
Yeah, ask an old person or something.
Ask an old person.
Who are the fucking Power Rangers? Duh.
I'd have to ask you.
I'd say who's, do you know who Lil Yachty is?
Do you all right?
Lil Yachty?
Yeah.
That's not the, no, I'm thinking Lil Poopy from Rockton, that little rapper there. Lil Yachty, I don't think I do know that, no.
See?
Ask an old fuck.
Check one for the millennials.
There we go.
Let me guess, he's a one-hit wonder rapper who has a video and then you're not going to hear him in three more years.
Yeah,
they nail
definitely.
It away.
No, 100% right.
All right.
Until he's bankrupt. When he goes bankrupt, you heard about him.
Well, this is our first, me and Witz did back before when we were still free agents on the independent podcast syndicate. It was tough, you know, doing the circuits down south and stuff, but we made it. We did a show about remote, believe it or not, once before, but this is our first remote on the Barstool Network from live from Sarasota. So it's good to finally get this done because next week I got a request now with a very huge guest. I'm going to check the email, see if he got back
huge.
To me, and it'll be a pretty good get. That's our tease for today. So
yeah, guests will be starting soon. Also, thank you for listening. We need you to rate it and leave a review for us, good or bad, on iTunes. we always love to hear the criticisms.
Back up to number two.
Or the love. But we do thank everyone, and we appreciate you all listening.
Take care, everybody. Have a good weekend.
Peace out.
Time.